It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Like the biggest sin to me, and where there was war, I wouldn't walk away. But after a time, I realized.
If you're waiting for the Women in Business radio show, we are going to be live on air in less than a minute.
Oh, I hope life teach you good. I hope life teach you good.
Channel 2 Talk Radio.
Hell.
Tune in next week to the Women in Business radio show for more stories, ideas, and inspiration to help you grow your business.
Do I ever get it right? Do I ever? What is going on? It's on some sort of auto thing. Hang on a minute, folks. Something strange is happening. It's still playing. Have we stopped? Are we actually live on it? I think we are. We were just about to have to ring the producer of the show to see what was going on. The trouble is, you see, I've been in here fiddling with knobs and buttons. So, excuse us.
Somebody put us on auto, which is not
good. I know. You see, look, you put two women on their own. You see, two old women on their own in a radio in a radio studio. I don't know.
Somebody left it on automatic for us.
They did. This is going to be so difficult to edit because we haven't got a start to it now. I don't know what we're going to do. They'll have to work that out.
They'll
anyway, welcome into those of you who've been listening to for a while will realise this sort of intro is not actually that unusual.
This is normal.
Never mind. Welcome welcome to the Women in Business Radio Show. I'm Sharon Murphy. My co-host is
Adele.
And it's Adele, actually, who worked out which button to press. Me, I can't see a thing. You see, I've got my long vision glasses on. I can't see a thing.
I've got my short sighted.
I know,
that's like a good pair.
that's my excuse, and we're sticking to it. Welcome to the show for this week. Our guest in the studio is Elaine Foster Gander.
She's not going to leave. No, you won't leave. No, leave. Please don't.
No.
I'm not leaving.
No.
Good morning, ladies.
She's stuck here. Now, Elaine Foster Gandy, Gandy is a textile artist and teacher. And I'm actually going to read out the information around Elaine because it's fascinating. Mm. And I want to make sure that we give her a proper introduction and we know what it is that she does. And I've asked her to write this down. So the important and the really crucial thing is it's going to be in her words. Okay. You really don't want me explaining what Elaine does. So she is a textile artist and teacher, and she's recently received Arts Council funding for a project called Hope, which Hope Weaving Communities Together, which is a giant dress woven with strips of fabric written on by over 500 participants. And the dress has toured in London, Blackpool and the South East. Now, Elaine comes from a fashion background working with famous designers, models and photographers, and pioneered a guerrilla-style retail outlet called Designer Sales UK that was the first to set up designer sales around the UK, selling samples and stock from high-end brands, including Vivienne Westwood, John Galliano and Jasper Conran. Wow.
All my faves.
Welcome.
Welcome, lady. Yes, well, welcome. Yes. Lovely to be here. Welcome. Lovely to meet you both.
Elaine, I think what first struck me about all of this was the amount of creativity, not only because you're an artist, but also the creativity that you brought into your business and the different paths that it had sort of, and I'm waggling my fingers to show. I do this all the time. I put things in inverted commas. I waggle my fingers. I pull expressions, hoping, of course, that you can see exactly what it is that I mean. But your career has gone off in a number of different, really very different pathways, hasn't it?
Yes. And yeah, thank you so much for inviting me. And I loved your hands because we're on radio, so people can't see
us.
Can't see us. I thought you handled that really well because I work on radio, and you know it's scary when it all goes, when the auto button's on and you think, what am I going to do? And Cassie's normally opposite me going, auto, come and take it out of auto.
Yeah, we've had far worse than that.
Oh,
I think the funniest one is when I get my skirts caught under the chair.
Oh,
and so
my
I can't move. So I can't reach the microphone.
I can't reach the microphone.
So we're trying to do all of this while Adele's trying to get my skirts out from in between the chairs. And, oh dear.
And without ripping it, wasn't it? Don't rip my skirt. I'm like, we might not have a choice here.
Yeah. The skirt might have to come off. It really might have to come off.
I'll tell you what, and I stick myself to the chewing gum on the desk. I mean, it goes on and on. So, but we're pros, you know. We're
pros.
I'm sure this happens in all of
it
the
does.
Top
it does.
I'm sure it does.
It does. It does. It does.
But
does.
On we go.
Yes.
Let us. I've got distracted. You see, we had such an unusual entrance that I've now got myself distracted. So we welcomed Elaine into the studio. I think what we need to do is go over and fire off with some of our sort of regular slots, which of course Elaine doesn't actually know about, which is all part of the fun. it means what we get is we tend to get sort of a bit of a gut reaction as opposed to something that's been rehearsed, but nothing tricky. So let's fire away. We're going to hear later about the Hope Project and how it came about. But right for now, we're going to sort of some of our regular slots. Are you going to start off?
Yeah. So let's start off with where we can listen. So we can listen on Spotify, on Apple, all the usual places. But do you know what? You can even go to our website, the Women in Business Radio Show website, because one, you can get all our latest episodes. And also you can subscribe if you want to.
So you can. You could if it was on there, actually. Yes, we've been mucking about
with it.
We are now on Substack. If you go to Substack, you will find the Women in Business Radio Show, and you can subscribe as a free. You can be a free subscriber, or you can contribute by paying £7 a month, where you get some sort of different premium posts. You get a little bit more information, and of course, you get to help us and other women in business. Yeah. It helps to keep us on the air and helps to keep us broadcasting, which would be brilliant.
And you can follow us in again Instagram, LinkedIn, and also on Twitter on Web Radio.
So announcements, what have we got to announce? I think we ought to mention the Women in Business Big Show 2023,
so
don't you?
10th of August, so we've got the Women in Business. When we were talking about that last week, so we've got a slightly different format going ahead, so we're excited about that. And lots of women are coming out and actually saying we're ready. We were talking about coming back in 2023, so I'm looking forward to that on the 10th. And also we've got our development circle, which we're sharing more about on the 14th of January. So we've got some really exciting stuff with the radio show and the big show for next year.
Yes, lots going on. I've been doing plans as well, drawing diagrams to show where everybody's going, which is a novel idea, isn't it?
It was looking good.
I'm sure what will happen is what normally happens, which is everybody just arrives and I try and organise 200 people in the morning. But
we will chaperone them.
It'll be fine just before our visitors arrive. Anyway, so that's August the 10th, 2023 at Longfield Academy, which is just down the road from Ebbsfleet. We have loads and loads and loads of exhibitors and entrance is free unless you would like to be a VIP visitor, in which case it's £49. And we have exhibitor space from £25. Yeah. And amazingly, we have 10 sponsor places and they are nearly gone.
I know, I'm so excited.
Those are the what we'll call the basic sponsor places. If you fancy being a headline sponsor, we are still looking for you because we haven't really launched the package yet, but it's on its way. So that's enough shameless promotion, isn't it? Yeah.
It's our show. We can be shameless.
In fact, there's something in the what have you learnt this week, actually. And it's about the shameless promotion show that I'm just going to talk very quickly about. Because what I've learnt this week is something that I thought was a little bit of a joke was shameless promotion. And we called a show shameless promotion because we thought that's what it was. It was just talking about why Adele and I were launching the development circle. And it is one of the most popular shows of the year. It's the one, and we did this, what, about 2 or 3 weeks ago? And it was, I'm not saying it was done tongue-in-cheek, but it was done as a promo, as a show that we just recorded as a way of Adele and I providing a promotion. That's what it was. We didn't pretend it was anything else apart from a promotion for the Women in Business Development Circle. And we have got so much feedback from it. People are saying it's really funny. They really enjoy listening to it. And it seems to be attracting people. So what I've learnt, actually, is that this was something that I called shameless promotion. And I wonder if that's something that, as women, we tend to do. It's certainly something that I did and that I thought about. And actually, it isn't shameless promotion. We're just talking about why we have set something up.
Yeah.
As a business. And I think that goes some way to showing partly what my attitude has been to shouting about what I do and why I'm doing it. And I think I need to learn something from that.
Yeah, I agree. Because again, we did that and we were like, oh, what's she called it? And to be fair, we were a little bit apprehensive even doing the show and I'll just go for it. But once we got into the conversation as usual. You and I were riffing, having a conversation. And you're right. And the feedback I got was, Adele, you were just explaining it. And I agree with you. It isn't. It was just telling us.
And I've had people coming up to me. And they don't normally do that. They may say, oh, I listened to the show. It's quite good. I've had people coming up to me and going, it was me. What you were talking about was me.
Yeah.
Do you think that it's to do with, I mean, why should we ever even think about being like shameful at all as women? But there is that feeling, isn't there? I suppose, I don't know, growing up with don't show off or, you know, and the thing is that women, it's our right, it's our God-earned right to actually take our space.
Yeah.
And it's really important that we take our space, you know. Yeah. I mean, my business, the first, as you introduced it, Design and Sales UK ran for 30 years. And that was just of an idea. I was a stylist in London at the time, working with some amazing people, worked with some amazing designers. And I had this idea because I needed to earn a bit more money. And there was a lot of stock and samples around. And so I basically I decided to set this business up and I had a big, huge list of contacts. And so I invited people to this studio, packed it full of designer gear, because I'd worked with Jasper Conran and all these other designers, and it flew from day one. And I could have sort of sat back and thought, oh, you know, I'm being too big. To be quite honest with you, I had a really successful career. After the menopause, and I've been through the menopause, I'm more into that space of, oh, you know, a little bit, I can catch myself going, oh, I don't know whether I should show my, you know, it's that sort of, I don't know what it is. It sort of hit me later in life. I never had that when I was younger. I was very, a bit fearless. As I've got older, even though I've had loads of success, there is that slight sort of, maybe because, you know, as you're older, you're kind of, there's that other, there's those voices going, you know, oh, she's a bit past it, or, you know, or those internal voices like, oh, well, you know, no one wants to look at her because she's too old, or all of that. And that's that goes on in all of our heads. I'm sure it does. Yeah.
It's weird because I didn't, I only called it shameless promotion because I didn't want people listening in and thinking there was going to be some content in there. So that's it was only called that for the purposes of distribution and putting it out there because we wanted to use it. And I didn't realise it was really subtle. You know, it was really subtle, I think, this thing at the back of my head that's going, actually, I wonder, should you be doing this? Or just be upfront about it so that people don't listen to it and think it's content? Because we were going to take snippets out of it. We were just going to take little edit out little snippets and use that.
And actually, people have said there was actually content in there because they were like, that's me and that's how I felt. I'm not on my own. Why am I different? So, yeah, so again, but we both sat here and went, shall we do it? And we need it for the content.
Yeah.
And that's, and it's turned out to be one of our top shows.
So, yes, that's what I've learned, really, is that sometimes the unexpected happens and you just have to get out there and talk about what you're doing. And whilst you were talking about what you were saying about as growing up and you know, as girls and all of that sort of thing, one thing that one sort of idea or concept that I love, and I think it rings true, is I have never heard a bloke, sorry blokes, but I have never heard anybody refer to a man as bossy.
No, oh no, I've
had this levelled at myself when I was younger and older. Well, Miss Bossy Boots. Yeah. I have never heard anybody refer to a bloke as Mr. Bossy Boots. And my answer now is, and I think it may have been Beyonce who said this, I'm not bossy, I'm the boss.
I quoted that last week.
Absolutely.
To somebody, who said I was bossy.
This is a put down. There's so many words that get levelled.
Or aggressive. You're aggressive.
What's all that about?
Bossy.
We are aggressive. We need to be in this industry. You know, you have to be a bit aggressive.
But I don't think it is. I think.
It's assertive, actually.
I think saying, what you believe and saying what you want and saying what you don't want and what you don't like, it's not aggressive. This is what is acceptable for me.
Absolutely. Talking to a couple of women last week and we were talking around, you know, I'm always labelled as bossy and I go, actually, I'm dealing with a supplier. Actually, I'm the boss in this conversation. And then they were talking about, you know, the relationship at home. As well with their partner and also like with their mum as well being, oh, well, you're doing this. And again, we'll talk about the microaggressions and all she was doing was trying to explain to her family and friends why she was running a business. And then we were talking about all these microaggressions and she said, is it me? And I said, no, sometimes it isn't. And again, that's where we're talking. But you're right. We get labelled aggressive and the man will get labelled assertive. And then we were talking about that challenge for women sometimes. And these are sometimes the background we have to face into that perhaps a male business owner doesn't have to.
Yeah. The microaggressions we get. I think it's really great you're talking about it because you know, when I look back, I ran a 30-year business and I started in 1988 and I was taking my business around the country and I remember in Liverpool being told by the manager to get out of my room and stand outside the door. And I was running a business. I was hiring a venue from him. I had like 25 staff running this business. And he shouted at me to get outside and wait outside. Yeah. How dare I come in? He belittled me. And I have had that. Oh, yes, yeah, she's bossy. She's assertive. You know, whenever I had press, oh, look at her big ego. You know, I had all of that thrown at me constantly. I think that people don't recognise that, you know, women in business, we have a lot harder struggle every time than men do. And I hate, you know, it's not against men. It's just real.
It's a fact.
But I think this is expectations. All right. I think sometimes we expect it to happen and we act as though it's okay that we have to put up with it. And my word at the moment is boundaries. Yeah. There are things that are just not acceptable.
Yeah.
And boundaries. I don't,
and it's okay to call it out.
And I don't have to accept it because I'm the boss.
Yeah.
And even if I wasn't running my own business, I'm still the damn boss wherever it is. If I'm working for somebody, if I'm behind the tills, if I'm sweeping the streets, I'm still the boss of me.
Yeah.
And what I get is and what I refuse is actually down to me. Mm. End of.
Yeah. It is boundary. Boundaries are really important. And I say that's a reoccurring theme that I talk to my ladies about when I'm networking, is about setting boundaries.
Right, we're going to stop that now because I can see where I'm heading into a rant. It's all right, there's somebody who has published something this week, and I'm not going to mention it because I can't, because somebody has published something that set me off.
Yeah.
And we all know what
tell
it
me
is.
About it.
Has triggered me like more than I have ever been triggered. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to stop ranting and we're going to get back onto the programme for this week. So what I've done, what I've learnt this week. What have you learnt this week?
Again, same as you. It is the feedback on that shameless promotion that actually I'm now... Because of that episode, I'm now more comfortable talking exactly about what we're doing. Mm. And that's what I've learned. It's okay.
Elaine, what have you learnt this week?
Yeah, I've learnt that not allowing other people's perceptions of myself, perceptions of me, define me. So what that means is, you know, if I get kind of passive aggressive behaviour or negative behaviour towards me, I don't have to let that define who I am. Because that isn't who I am. I know who I am. And, you know, that there have been many times in life where other people might look at me and go, you know, look at her, all colourful and wonderful. I get really, most of the time I get really lovely, like, oh, I love your boobs.
Envy today.
Yeah. But occasionally I can get that coming towards me. And it can really shut people down, that sort of negativity. So that's really important. I was listening to Brené Brown and...
my favourite.
Absolutely amazing. And she's done a whole piece on that.
Yes, she has.
Other people's perceptions. Yeah. And don't let that to define us as women. Mm. Yeah.
Do you know, somebody asked me, this was a couple of days ago, I was out for dinner and we were talking about somebody who was sort of Marmite, you love them or hate them. And she asked me, she said, do you think you're Marmite? And I know exactly what she thinks. Do you think you're Marmite? And my first reaction was, oh God, I hope so. No, seriously, I really hope so. It's not that I don't want everybody to love me. But I would far rather have that Marmite effect where people love me or people hate me than I would, well, it's nice.
Oh, my God, that middly world.
Yes, maybe. Yeah, the bit in the middle where you've never said anything ever that annoys anybody else. Where everybody just thinks you're nice, you're okay.
Oh, she's so lovely. Yeah, she's so nice.
Oh, absolutely. But again, women don't... I'm like that. You love me or you hate me. This is, but women don't know I'm going to sit on the fence. I'm going to get splinters. It hurts. I love that.
But society doesn't.
No,
society doesn't. Our environment doesn't. We want women to be. I mean, I don't want to be kind of throwing, but Iran right now. You know, it's just horrible what's happening there. You know, they want women to be contained. Absolutely. And this is what we're talking in this country, not that long ago. I mean, that women didn't have rights, didn't have a vote, couldn't go out to work, So, yeah.
Love that, Marmite. Yes. I hope so. Yeah. I love that response.
Yeah. I mean, it's like Apple, isn't it? I've never really heard anybody ranting about other makes of computer or other makes of technology. But sometimes there are some people, and I know who they are, where you mention like Apple or iPhone, and they're off. It's a great long diatribe of crap nobody asked for. No. All you've said was I'm thinking of getting a new phone. And they've seen off. That's they it. Go, I hate this. Okay. Nobody's listening, nobody cares. You got your phone, I got my phone. What's going on? But it's the Marmite effect of Apple that sets people off. Yeah. Well, I tell you what, sometimes when you're talking about it, you're talking about it, and being spoken about is sometimes better than not being spoken about.
I love that.
As long as you haven't been a seriously nasty piece of work. Yes. I'm saying that's it. I'm done. Okay. So, Elaine, what's your biggest failure?
Oh, my biggest failure was, I think, I was giving loads of people advice about don't expand. You know, this was a time when we had that recession. So it was 2012, wasn't it? 2012, that big recession hit. And I was telling everyone, don't expand. You know, in my studio, there was loads of other artists, don't expand. You know, it's gonna be a tough time. What did I do? Expand. So I didn't listen to my own advice. And I decided to go off around the road again on a road trip. And I did that. So I did my road trips early 90s. So it was new. No one, there wasn't TK Maxx. There wasn't this, you know. So this is in my fashion business. Anyway, I expanded. It was a big learning curve. But as I'm a true believer, these things are all meant to happen, because it was getting to the point where that was the end of my business. And my higher power was going, you're an artist. You're an artist. This is what you need to be doing. And so out of that came a little chrysalis and seed growing, like pushing through the dark earth of winter. And that was my art that was starting to grow. Mm. So I think out of every failure comes an amazing learning growth. And then, yeah, so my art started happening. 2012, I started joining a class in the village down the road, and started getting back into my painting again. And that was sort of helped me really get on the road to where I am now with my art business.
Do you think that there had been clues and hints and nudges that the universe had been sending you about getting back into your art or starting your artwork, that you'd ignored them?
Oh yes.
And you'd sort of
carried
on, and you either hadn't seen them or you hadn't or you'd seen them but not acknowledged them and not done anything about it. And eventually the universe sort of had to send you something.
Scream at me.
Yes. That really, you haven't listened to that. Try this.
Kick it.
Yeah. The funniest bit was when we'd gone to the first venue we went to, it was in Glasgow, and it was like, no, the first venue was Manchester, and we did all this promotion, spent all this money. We were staying in the best hotel in Manchester. Before I'd been to Manchester, the so many sales, doing really, really well. This was like, yeah, this was 15 years later, and we were there, one person was in the queue. And I thought, oh my word. Then the next venue, there was a whole fashion thing happening in Liverpool. About five people turned up. And then we got to Glasgow, and it was like a tsunami hit, because I joined this other kind of company. But it wasn't good, because it was like this tsunami hit with loads of people. They all wanted a free gift. No one wanted to buy anything. Yeah. So it was feast and famine, but it was just wrong. And yeah, I kept getting these voices, you know, and messages, but I couldn't hear them. I was like, no. And I was that conscious that I was going, I can hear you, but I'm not listening. With my ears in my, my fingers in my ears going, no, I'm not going to listen to you. No. I'm doing it my way. And I love that, you know, Frank Sinatra track, you know, because that I was just belligerent, and I want to do it my way, and it had to sort of crash. It had to crash a bit, and then out of that came my beautiful new life. Not new life; it was still the same life, but more on track where I was spiritually, emotionally, mentally.
Do you think that sort of thing happens when we don't take the time to listen to ourselves and think about what's happening, where we're so busy racing, organising, doing, planning on the same track?
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So we're planning just more of the same.
Yeah, yeah. Like I was like a hamster going around a wheel, you know, trying to go faster and faster and faster. Yeah. And the faster I went, the more failure I had, you know. And I know today that if I take care of myself, if I put self-care first, then miracles happen. Mm. They just happen.
What does self-care mean for you?
I've got a list, actually. And I talked to my students about this because one of my students came to me and she broke down into tears and she said, I'm just exhausted. I've got all these GCSEs. I don't know how I'm going to cope. And I said, OK, right. Have you got a self-care list? So I made her make a self for her homework. I made her make a self-care list.
Self-care list.
This is our shameless own personal development, isn't it? The show?
Wine. Steak and kidney pudding.
Yeah, yeah. It can be all those things. Okay. And it can be, it just can be like, go and pick a beautiful leaf from the garden and put it on your desk. Sit down for 5 minutes and look out the window at the view. It can be as much as light a candle, go and have a bath, put some petals in the bath, go and buy yourself a nice dress just for you. Go and do something that you haven't done before. Go walk barefoot in the grass in the winter when the mud squidges through your toes, splash in a puddle. You know, it's all of those things. There's a huge list I've got. So now what I do is that I know if I put self-care first, all of the abundance flows. So that has to come first. Whereas I used to work the other way around. Mm. I used to think that if I literally veins sticking out of my neck, you know, yeah. You know,
so,
like.
So I'm going to say this because Elaine's not a very big person. We're not talking.
I get it.
You know, that feeling of just push it harder.
Force.
You know, wanting to push. And my body's just, and my, you know, my heart's going, oh, really? You know, they're sort of hanging behind me. So I was working with my head rather than my heart. Mm. And I think at the beginning of my business, it was so abundant and it was so abundant so quickly when I did fashion that it just all flowed. And I think there was a higher power. And I brought spirituality in my business, into my fashion business. Mm. I worked with a spiritual healer who we used to set up the venue spaces with crystals, done everything. I used to have a team where we used to chant and they used to go, my brother, who's 6 foot tattooed ex-army, used to go, you know, with his eyes up in his head thinking, oh God, here we go. She's telling us to before we start running one of these events. But I knew what I was doing. I was pulling the team together for us to move forward in this unit together. Mm. We were one body. Mm. You know, so I did amazing stuff in the fashion time. Mm. But I think towards the end, it was definitely that straining with the sort of, you know, veins kind of pushing something. Because I was wanting something to work and it wasn't right. It was like my whole body had shifted. Mm. Everything had shifted. And it was a time of sort of like blossoming and receiving rather than this time of pushing.
It's so interesting because when you said 1988, I went into banking and it was, I was bossy, seen, not heard. Can you wait outside the office? I went, actually, I'm the boss. That's my office. And everybody just fell about love. Oh my God, you know, not a great start. So I was brought up through like force. There's a bit of flow. Then as I've got to that age and that tipping point when I have my meltdown in the boardroom, it's because I was forcing because that's how I had to be. Mm. And then I worked with a spiritual healer talking about flow. I'm like, oh, I can't flow. I'm out of control. I can't flow. And she's taken the last year to show me I can still get the force to flow. But when you said 88, I was like, I remember that. I walked in and I went, oh no, sorry, that's the new boss's office. I went, I am the boss. And in 88, that was not seen. Mm. And then from then on, I've had to force all the way through. And like you said, the veins popping. I remember doing that and walking into boardrooms where I was asked to make the tea and coffee and not realised I was actually leading the team. And then all of a sudden, you've got to switch to flow, but it's that tipping point. Yeah, it's an interesting one.
It's interesting. And you weren't, it sounds like at that point in your life, like some with us all, is if we're not embodying the idea of taking our space as human beings, as women, powerful women in business, it's that sort of standing in that space. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, and walking into a room and automatically being judged as a secretary rather than the boss. Mm. Yeah.
So I'm just writing some notes, didn't I?
But the interesting thing, talking about self-care, again, working with the type of women I am, it's literally just with somebody yesterday, and I said, how's the week? Oh, I've had staff, yeah, well, so where's the self-care? Well, I've got this, I'm running around. You know, she's had her children later in life. She's got a partner who's got his career. Children are unwell, but he automatically went to work. So she was trying to manage the ill children and the business and trying to work all that together. Mm-hmm. And she was completely broken. And she said, oh, just my self-care agenda's gone. And it's really interesting that it's like a repeatable pattern sometimes. Mm.
You see, I'm sort of, I think that's the place that we put ourselves into, because I was in a similar situation, and I sort of two working parents where, and a child, and there was no one person who would take on that responsibility. There was no assumption that it would be me that stayed at home, because I didn't assume that I was going to stay at home. And so it was dealt with as a shared responsibility, and whoever was in the position to stay at home or do, sort that out or pick up or do whatever is the person that would do it. And I think sometimes we just we assume and we let other people, you know, we let them race off with that. Whereas if I think if you start from the point of view of I don't think you even have to say anything. I don't think you have to say it out loud. I don't think there needs to be a conversation. I think it's something that happens inside that manifests itself outside.
And it really helps if you've already, before you have children, because I had my daughter late in life. I had her at 40. And I only sort of, I was like one of those meerkats that sort of sprung up and went, hold on a minute, something's missing. What is it? I want a family. You know, I want a partner and a family. And it was really like, I literally, it was like 35, my head went up and went, hold on, you know. And so I kind of then was starting to think about that a bit and sort of move towards that. And so that all happened at 40. And I was very lucky at that point to have my mum around. So I already had a business. So there wasn't any, any, there was, you know, I wasn't going to, I was still running my business whilst I had my daughter, but I had my mum. So my mum was there really supporting me. And because I had this lifestyle business, because it was like 3 days a week, I was running these pop-up events. I could employ people to come work part-time with me. And I employed a manager to run the business when I had my daughter, you know. And that was, it, yeah, it was a great learning curve, you know. But not easy.
No.
Not easy.
What, Elaine, is your superpower?
Ah, superpower. I think it's my ability to communicate. Well, actually, it's a combination of that and my art. I think there's something, we all are born with a gift. And that's your, what you're saying, superpower. And I met someone the other day who knew a really close friend of mine who was the head of St Martin's, Central St Martin's Women's Wear, Howard Tangy. He's an amazing guy. He taught John Galliano to draw. He taught me to draw. An amazing man. And she said, she was talking about working in charity or working in therapy. And he said, I could never do that because what I do is draw. And she said that those words helped her remember what her superpower was. And I think for me, my superpower is creativity. And to be able to communicate that to others. So I have the ability to make things with my hands. It's just innate. So I can make, I'm good at it. I know I am. And so that is my superpower. And to bring that to share it with others and show others how they can do it too. They can make.
Thank you. So often we, I don't know, we compare ourselves to others and how they're so much better at everything than we are. And I believe everybody has a gift. They just have to find it.
Yeah, absolutely. Completely got, yeah.
They just have to find it.
And people have this, whether it's through education or through their class or whatever it is, that we get these bad messages that we aren't good enough. And we aren't special, and that's rubbish. Every human being has a spark of, because we are born of creation, you know. So how can you say I'm not creative? We are born. We are creative. That's the act of being born is the act of creation.
I think education has a lot to do with it, the way that our schools channel people and knock out their creativity. And my absolute favourite person ever for talking about this, if you have a child, go and listen to the videos of Ken Robinson, Sir Ken Robinson, who created the most popular ever TED Talk, who is sadly no longer with us, talking about creativity in schools. He was an education specialist. He was the most amazing man. And just go and he's also funny. The way that he explains things is really funny. But just if you've got children, you need to hear this. You really do. And it's about finding your creativity and how our education system just doesn't help us do that.
No, and I work in education, you know, I teach key stage 3 to 5, you know, and so, yeah, it's a challenge because the system is set up for a different reason, you know.
That is what his talk is about. He is sadly no longer with us. Just a super, super loss. So that's Sir Ken Robinson.
Fantastic.
And I think there are still people on Twitter managing his account. Amazing guy. Okay, listen, Elaine, we are getting away from where I wanted to be, which is talking about the Hope Project.
Yes.
I want to talk about what it is and how it came about, because it grew, didn't it, out of sort of, I'm not going to say adversity, but it did in a way, didn't it?
Yeah.
Of a need. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah. So in lockdown, I lost all my work. So at that point in time, I went back to study again. So I'm a mature student 3 times. I left school at 16 with no qualifications. So I did it all later in life. So I did a BA and then 2 BAs and then an MA and inclusive arts practice. So I'd sort of started on a different trajectory, more my art practice. That's what I was working towards. But all my work dried up. So because I was working with vulnerable groups, couldn't meet any of them. So all of my freelance work dried up. So I was sort of thinking, what am I going to do? So I just went on walks, actually, and drew lots and started to sort of that. And that's linking to the artist's way, because Julia Cameron talks about that idea of pages, writing your pages every morning.
Morning pages.
So it's morning pages. So my morning pages were going out walking and drawing. So I was doing that every day and filming myself doing some of it as well. And then suddenly things started to loosen up a bit. And then suddenly I got some online teaching. I set up an online teaching where I was doing a Monday group, had a group of women that I was teaching art on Zoom. And then I got some work with the students. And I was kept thinking, well, what am I going to be able to show them on Teams? You know, like holding things up to the camera. So I sent them little packs in the post of these little weaving ideas. And that's the weaving then started to happen. So I started thinking, oh, okay, this is interesting. And then I got the weaving bug. So I was starting to weave on doors and things, you know, like my family were
frame. Like, so yeah, you're using the door as a
door
frame.
Door as a frame. Yeah, okay. So, you know, putting the kind of string round the door, you know, underneath the door, up again, round. So it was this big frame that I was then weaving on. So I could think, God, you can weave on anything. So I got really excited about that. And then I was praying a lot. I was meditating a lot. You know, I was doing this thing called the Pomodoro technique, which is where you work 20 minutes solidly. Mm. You put it on your timer and then you do self-care. Mm-hmm. You have to do self-care, something fun afterwards. So that's where my list comes in. Yeah. OK, what am I going to do? And there was this wonderful one called Laughing Yoga, which I'll share with you later. But it's hilarious. And it was about 5 minutes. This guy that was in this gold lame dress doing Laughing Yoga. Fantastic. So I started thinking about weaving. And I was thinking, and then a motif that I've used a lot in my art is a dress, the dress, because my nan was a seamstress and she was a huge influence on my life. Mm. And I made lots of work about being, there was one particular piece of work where I was big plus size and I needed to lose weight. And so it was all about that, my nan making me this dress when I'd lost weight. So I was thinking about that dress a lot and I thought, oh, cool, what about weaving a dress? Oh, that would be good. And then I thought, but how am I going to, I want to connect with other people. You know, that this is a time right now where we're separate from each other and there's a lot of trauma. How can I use my skills to bring people back together again? And there was a, I'd read something that Caroline Duffy, the poet laureate, had done this thing a few years ago, where she went round the country. All of the bookshops were closing, all of the bookshops, and she had this thing of where she wanted to revitalise the bookshops. So she went round saying poetry, doing poetry recitals in all these bookshops around the country. And she said it was like a weaving. They were weaving this kind of blanket that was pulling things back together. Mm. And I had this idea that maybe this dress could be a weaving to bring people back together. So then I went on a big sort of discovery of how am I going to do that? Who am I going to get to kind of engage with? You know, there was no one. I was emailing people. No one was coming back. You know, like all the institutions weren't coming back. So anyway, finally, Maidstone Museum came back to me and they were really excited. They've got a fabric collection there, a costume collection. So, and also because I'd studied at Rochester at Kent CIAD, Kent Institute of Art and Design. I grew up in Gravesend, so I went there, and so there was a connection there with Maidstone. So anyway, to cut a long story short, they came on board and I was looking for groups to work with. So I was sending out, like I did with my students, packs of little bits, strips of fabric. London College of Fashion sponsored the fabric. They couldn't give me a space to show in at that particular time, but I had a connection with someone who I'd been at college with, put me on to this woman who ended up giving me loads of fabric from amazing loads of fabric. So went up in my car and I had an intern working with me and we stuffed the car full of fabric. It was literally to the roof. And then she was going, can we get, oh yeah, yeah, squeeze it in there, a bit more. And she was like, just take as much as you want, you know. So it was wonderful. And then I could use all that fabric for my students as well. So everyone's benefited. So anyway, we designed this big template, which is in my studio, 12 foot high. And we wove this dress together. And I ran workshops with the Nepalese ladies group, visually impaired, the elderly, school children in state schools and private schools. Did loads and loads of voices are involved in this dress. And it's toured, as you've said in the intro, Sean, it's toured around the UK.
And I just wanted to sort of follow up very quickly on something that you received Arts Council funding for this.
Yes.
So, as businesswomen, we still need to put food on the table, don't we? And we need to have a roof over our heads. So you actively went out to seek funding to help support you to deliver this project.
Yes. Yeah, because I knew that it was going to cost me, you know, there's no way I could have supported that. So I then, I actually got a mentor to help me write the Arts Council funding.
So yes, because it's applying for funding isn't that easy, is it?
There are certain
words that you need. There's a certain format. There's this unwritten thing that you need to do. There are certain boxes that you need to tick. It's just nobody tells you what the boxes are.
Yes. How to do it, what to do it. It is, when you first look at it, you think, most people walk away from it because it is it's such a big hill to climb. It feels like a huge hill to climb. And actually, so I worked with someone who helped me kind of break it down. And I think without her help, you know, I wouldn't have been able to do it on my own.
Yeah, I think that's a really good tip for, you know, in a lot of cases where you're going for funding. I think there's some funding which is designed to be simple.
Yeah.
And there's other funding where, though they may think it's simple, but there's some serious hoops to jump through. And I think the trick in getting it is working out which one it is, where you need to bring in the additional, the specialist support, really.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of local government funding, for instance, is actually relatively easy to apply for and get. some of the others not so much. So that was able to support you as well as some of the expenses of generating, of creating it. So, you know, collecting fabric, getting stuff out, posting it, putting it all together, touring with your dress.
Employing people.
Yeah, employing people.
I mean, that's crucial, really, because during that time I was able to employ other inclusive artists to come and run workshops for me, so for the project. So I got
Alison Cotton. So it was helping lots of people.
Yeah. Nadia, another who did paper making. Alison came in and did Hapazomi making, which then that inspired me to bring that to my school, to my classes that I, when I teach textiles. So there was this lovely interconnectedness. And I was also able to employ one of my students, my intern I employed. I always pay my interns. And also I had another student who was studying who I'd worked with when he was at school, and I could give him money to make a video. So he got paid to make a video. So there was lots of people that got involved in the project. So it was lovely, you know, being up and also work with Women from Refuge. And that's who I'm working with currently.
Is it?
So what I'd like to do is sort of pull us back into some sort of tips. Adele, were you going to say something or is it past?
No, I was saying the diversity of the groups of women that you were working with and the refuge and the way it pulled it together with the weaving. I think there's not enough of that that's going on. And that's where we're talking around women and coming together and showing your powers. I always think about Stronger Together, and sometimes I think the way it seems, especially for me this year, some things can be quite divisive. So when I looked at your project and coming in, I was like, yes, somebody's talks about pulling people together rather than just keep driving this wedge between people.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's what, well, I that's the feedback I got, you know, taking it up to the resilience revolution in Blackpool. It was absolutely amazing. The work they're doing up there, part of, it's just, the resilience revolution is incredible, and they run workshops. You can get involved with that. I can leave you, Sean, with information of that.
I was just about to say that that perhaps is somebody that we should have a chat with. Elaine, I want to bring us back to, we have some sort of regular things that we have at the end, which is like top tip for this topic. Okay, so what's your top tip for this topic? One of the problems I'm having is I haven't actually got a topic, so I've come up with one. I've come up with one. And it's using your creativity as your business.
Yeah.
So what is your top tip? If you can resonate with that, because I've just had come, you may be sat there thinking, what on earth is she going on about? Okay. So what is your top tip for using your creativity as your business?
I think I've got quite a few, but the one, I suppose that there's the one talking about the Arts Council. If there are people listening today that think I'd like to go and get a project out there, is that the bigger you can make it, the better. The more people you can engage with, the better. So it's got to have a wow factor. So that's the key there. That's what they're looking for. So if you were going to, if you could say, oh, well, I've got an idea and I'm going to go and take it around a couple of village halls, I don't think I might be wrong, but I think you're going to struggle. But if you can get someone, I don't know, someone like get Channel Radio involved or, you know, get sort of something with a bit of a name behind it involved in your project, that's what the Arts Council would like.
I think what I got from that was that perhaps is the difference between having a creative business and being an artist, which is, what you're saying is basically don't go and look for Art Council funding if your project is you're going to paint a watercolour of the river.
Yeah.
It has to be out there. It has to be outside of you and it has to be engaging and bringing people in a sort of community feel and involving other people. It's not about you and a canvas and a pencil.
Yeah. And if you did want to do watercolours in the village hall, then maybe go down to the local shops and see if there's any sponsors along that road there, that a flower shop or something, someone that could join in with that. Yeah. But horses for courses. Yeah. That's,
It's not about your head and your canvas. It's about getting out there.
Yeah.
Just talking generally about business, what's your top tip for being in business?
I think the most important thing is self-care, actually, going back to self-care. Because if I put that first as a businesswoman, because sometimes I'll push myself, try and push myself through the eye of a needle, always. Like, there's so many options out there right now as women. It's like, oh, perhaps I could do that. And someone will say, oh, why don't you do a podcast? You know, or why don't you do a video? Or why don't you do this? Why don't you do it? And you think, and you then you watch Oprah and you think, oh, maybe I could do it like that. Oh, I'm going to write a book. I'd like to write a book. I'd really like to write a book. You know, and then your head.
I actually don't want to. I'm probably
spinning.
The only person I know who doesn't want to write a book. I've got no urge to write a book at all. I'd be crap. I'd never finish it.
Yeah, yeah.
It'd be full of spelling mistakes because I wouldn't get it edited properly. And I'd say, oh, I'll do.
Well, at least you're really, you know, yeah, you know what
I'd
your limits are.
No urge to write a book.
But if you did want to write a book, you know, maybe there's an easier way to write it.
Yes,
like
there probably there, is.
You know, you could do a load of PDF files or something. I don't know. There's an easier way to do
actually, it. Actually, it's funny. I'm sitting here pontificating about how I don't want to write a book. And 3 days ago, I actually wrote the outline of a book.
See? There you go. But maybe you need to release it to have it come.
But it's each chapter. Anyway, that's all about me. Never mind. What do you know now that you wish you'd have known when you started out?
I think I know that everything that's meant to happen will happen if you just have faith. And I used to, again, that pushing, coming from very low self-esteem, fear-based, you know. My self-esteem as a child was right beyond the floor. It was way down in the earth. So just that realisation, and it's a spiritual, I have a spiritual practice, and it's a spiritual realisation that everything will come in its own time, and whatever's meant to be will happen. So it's the realisation of that. And I never had that growing up. It was a lot of fear. There was a trust in a sort of way, but I was on the seat of my pants, you know, just living life in that way, in quite dangerous ways in times growing up.
That's actually one of my sayings that I have written down, because every now and then I sort of come to this screeching thing, oh my God, what am I going to do? This is happening now. How is this going to work? How am I going to live? And then I have that. Everything's happening as it's supposed to.
Yeah.
Phew. Okay, and breathe. Elaine, how can people get hold of you?
Yeah, my website is elainefostergandhi.com. And there's a form on there if you want to fill that in. I'm on Instagram, hashtag FosterGandhi. So the website can come straight through to me. So, that's me.
Elaine Foster-Gandhi, thank you so much for being such a wonderful guest on the Women in Business radio show.
Thank you for having me, Sean.
And we hope to catch up with you very, very soon. But we will see you all again very, very shortly.
Welcome to the Women in Business radio show with Sean Murphy, connecting women in business around the globe.